Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 145, week 11 in the SEC, recorded Tuesday, November 11th, 2014. This week, the roundtable discusses the committee's decision to leave Alabama at 5, even after a big win in Death Valley. They also look at wins by A&M, Georgia, and Florida, who all had something to play for. The bowl picture is getting clear, and they discuss what it takes for the SEC to get as many as 13 teams bowl eligible. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey. Week 11 has passed in the SEC. Just a couple more weeks left of college football, and we all get to take a big, huge relief. And then all the hectic conversation starts for the bowls. But we still got a lot of football left before we get to that. And probably some upset fans that are going to happen between now and that time where we all get to finally exhale from this crazy first season of the college football playoff that's, you know, kind of working itself out in some ways it's not. So we'll delve into that. We just had week three, is that right? Blair Smiley's joining me tonight.
That's correct. I think it's week three. Week... And for the third week in a row, Mississippi State hadn't been able to move up in the polls.
Crazy how that happened. If you're new to the show, Blair is our Mississippi State fan. We do this every week. We look at the football. We look at the basketball sometimes. We look at the baseball even. I don't know how often I'd say we look at baseball. Whenever you're on in the spring, Blair, right?
Exactly.
But we do this on a regular basis, and we do the video version of this, and that's on YouTube. I was going to say iTunes, but they don't do the video. iTunes has our podcast, so does Stitcher, Google Plus, Facebook. Anywhere you can get an RSS feed, you can get this. Look up SEC SRT, subscribe, like, join, whatever you need to do to get this on a regular basis. We'll be happy to deliver it to your home. So all you got to do is hit that little button. So we appreciate that. Had some good conversations this past week of some folks that have found me and kind of give me a hard time. They say I don't talk enough Vanderbilt. Told them they needed to win.
Yeah.
You know, and I was already...
They missed the one podcast where we spent that first opening 20 minutes on them.
Yes. I did say that. I let them know. It's like, you know, we mistakenly started a podcast with you guys once. But, you know, it was a guy that's pretty close with the program and is pretty in touch. And, you know, he was hyping them up. And I almost bought into the fact that Vanderbilt was going to pull something crazy out. And we'll talk about the games this week. But, you know, I'll say that if they wouldn't have shot themselves in the foot over and over and over again, he might have been right. But that... Yeah. That was not the case for Vanderbilt. So we'll talk about all the week that was. We'll talk about the week that will be. Some great action coming up for week 12's slate of games. Some things I think will really pan themselves out as you look at week 12. There's going to be some things that do become clear. There's a number of programs there that are setting to try to become bowl eligible or put themselves in position to be able to be bowl eligible. And then there's others like your Mississippi State Bulldogs that are, you know, fighting for their lives to try to not move down in the polls any further than they are. And they've got their own tests and battles to do that. And there's some others in that group that are trying to inch up just a little bit to get to one of those four spots. So we'll look at all of that stuff, and we do that in about an hour. So that's who we are, what we do, and what we're going to get into. Blair, kick us off. What game do you want to talk about first real fast?
Well, I think, the game that I think everybody's talking about from this past week is obviously the Auburn upset. You know, everybody saw that number, I think, start out at like 18, actually creep up into the 20, low 20s, I believe. Might even been like a 22 and a half point.
I saw 20 and a half, I think. Or no, I did see 22.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, that was one of the things that, you know, for me, you were wondering if Texas A&M was ever going to kind of get up after their week last week. Kyle Allen's, you know, first start, you know, and kind of the struggles that they had.
Yeah, because they only won 21-16, is that right? Against
it was something like that, yeah. And it was, he had a very good, you know, first half, then really struggled in the second half. And Texas A&M, you know, it was one of those things where if you've watched Auburn over the last four games, they've really regressed defensively. And they, you know, when I thought when they played Mississippi State, I thought that defensive line was really, really good. I thought that was by far the toughest and stoutest line that we had played up until that time. But, you know, watching them play Ole Miss, I mean, it was just, you know, it was just a scoring fest. And so you figured that Auburn was going to score more than Texas A&M. But, you know, A&M, you got to give it to them. They came in there with a plan. And the whole thing is, you know, everybody talks about Auburn and, you know, all of the close wins and how they've won ball games. But it just is a testament of, you know, as long as you play close ball games, the luck is going to change. And there was going to be a game where they kept it close and they didn't actually make the plays to win. And that's what happened. And to be honest with you, I thoroughly enjoyed the way they lost, just because it was, you know, it was, you know.
It could have easily been the other way around.
Exactly.
And A&M had two mishaps in the last minute, what, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes?
Absolutely. So it was, you know, I think that's what everybody was talking about, you know, from the get-go was, you know, really Auburn's, you know, with the Georgia and Alabama coming up, you know, and I thought that that was really the shocker of the weekend for me. I think across the country as well. I mean, across the country there was, what, five top 15 programs that went down? I mean, they all played each other, but, you know, it was a big shakeup weekend, you know. And to kind of top that off, Shane, is, I mean, boy, I tell you what, this playoff thing's going to really ruin the regular season, right? I mean, this has been, you know, and we talked about this on this podcast. You know, first 3 weeks of the season, you had some good games every once in a while. But I tell you what, we've been on about a five-week stretch here where across the nation, it's been game after game after game. It's been really, really entertaining, and we got some coming up this week. So, you know, that was the thing that I took away from it was Auburn's defense, you know, which Ellis Johnson alluded to a couple of weeks ago. Hey, if we can't shore up some of this run defense, you know, we're going to have a hard time doing what we want to do later in the year. And it's come back to bite them. I mean, you know, they won the Ole Miss game, which we don't know how that would have turned out if Treadwell didn't break his leg and fumble the ball, because there was still a minute and 30 left, and the way that game was going, who's to think that Auburn wasn't going to come back down and at least kick a field goal?
Yeah, but I don't disagree with that. But that was at what, the six? No, was at the goal? Was it at the goal line? Right. So that would have been a score.
Yeah, that was the one that was at the goal line. So, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. I think Auburn, you know, the defense, I think, is the big thing, and then a guy, of course, the, you know, really the senior leadership. You know, you've got a Nick Marshall, who really had an indecision on that basically that read option. He wanted to, the last second wanted to pull it back out and fumble the ball there at the 1 yard line to turn it over to Texas A&M. They get the ball back and, you know, Dismukes, who is, you know, a senior, I believe, center, well experienced, you know, snaps the ball when he's not supposed to. So, you know, just one of those things that, I think for the weekend was really the story of everything.
Yeah, it's when I look at that game, It just shows that as much as we've been on A&M the last 3 or 4 weeks, it just goes to show you how much parity there really is in the SEC, and that no matter what week it is, that no matter how good you are, you can get beat.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter if you're an East or West opponent. I mean, because the way A&M has performed over the last couple weeks, you know, they could be on par with some of the teams in the East, and we might get a glimpse of that this week as we talk about that this week's lineup and slate of games. But, you know, one of the things, and this kind of complements that whole mental picture in my head, at least, you know, listening to some of the folks today on talk radio, and over the last couple of weeks, you know, they look at Alabama and talk about, you know, their wins and losses, and how they point to that Arkansas game and how Arkansas hasn't won a game in the SEC in almost 2 years. And I go, yes, but have they not watched Arkansas play in those this season? Because watching Arkansas play, they're playing like a really good team that, unlike other programs, have had zero breaks go their way. And sometimes that's how it happens. And it's a break one way or the other that can allow a team to win. And Arkansas hasn't had that. So just because Alabama had a close win against Arkansas doesn't mean that Arkansas was bad or Alabama played bad, in my opinion. And it just helps to show how crazy and how balanced from top to bottom the SEC is.
Yeah, and I think it also goes to show that, you know, we do not have a really dominant team. You don't have a 2011 LSU or Alabama that is just so superior to everybody else in the league. You know, so that, you know, I think, you know, when you actually take a look at it, you do have across the board, I think, you know, the bottom of the league is better. I think everybody can say Kentucky's better than they were a year ago. You know, Arkansas is better than they were a year ago.
Tennessee is better.
Really, yeah, Vanderbilt's really regressed. But other than that,
but
everybody's kind of been there.
They've regressed, but they've found something over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. So I mean, it is one of those things that if you don't show up and you don't, you know, really kind of you know, take the bull by the horn, so to speak. You know, it's one of those things that you can lose on any Saturday. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, that was to watch that game. That was the A&M Auburn game to wrap that one up. That was just a great game to watch. Even if you, unless you're an Auburn fan, because you hate the way that ended. But other than that, I mean, that was an exciting game from the very beginning of that game all the way through. That was a really fun game to watch. Now, games that were not necessarily fun to watch, in my opinion, was probably Ole Miss hosting Presbyterian. I don't know what you need to say or what we could go into about a 48-0 win at Presbyterian against Presbyterian. And then you guys, your Mississippi State Bulldogs, I think that game was a little closer for a large part of that game than you guys wanted it to be against UT Martin. But at the end, you all pulled that out 45-16. I don't know what's there to say about both of those other than with yours in Mississippi State, you know, it was good to see Dak Prescott running the way he did. All the concerns about him being in the walking boot after Kentucky, I think all of that was kind of put to rest and shows that he is healthy.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where State actually, they set their Justin Malone, their starting guard. They set, you know, Jamion Lewis, who we've actually missed since the LSU game, which is the, you know, this has been one of the crazy things. He's the leading scorer. He was the leading yards receiver coming back in the SEC, and we've missed him for 5 games. But they basically set him out so that we could get him back for Alabama 100%. Yeah, we were able to get Dak, and, you know, Josh Robinson touched the ball 6 times. Got a lot of backs in there. We got Dak kind of out there after 1 drive in the third quarter. So, you know, for me, it was exactly the way we wanted to script it up, get a lot of the guys out there. I mean, when I look at the game in the beginning of the fourth quarter and, guys are making tackles and I don't even know who they are, that means it was a good day. It means there's a bunch of people sitting down. So I kept going, now who's 51? I don't know that guy. So
that's a game where you have to have the roster in front of you.
Exactly, man. So it was exactly what we wanted to do, you know, in a way that actually fell. And that's always a tough thing because, I mean, you could tell those kids are waiting for this week. You know, it's hard to tell 19-year-olds to go play UT Martin.
And get up for it.
Game. Yeah, and that's been a good game for Mississippi State because the coach at UT Martin played baseball and football at Mississippi State. So there's a connection there. Dylan Favre was one of the rotating quarterbacks for UT Martin, which was Dak Prescott's roommate at Mississippi State. His redshirt freshman year. So there's a little bit of storylines there, but yeah, it was one of those, let's get in there, have a little homecoming and let's go get ready for Alabama.
And we've talked about this on podcasts, and I think we really touched on it last week when you weren't able to join us, is that how just perfect Mississippi State schedule has lined up, because when you don't have a bye week, and you play a couple tough opponents, you get a Tennessee Martin squeezed in between. Mm-hmm. And you know, that Kentucky matchup is for everything it was a tough fought game, for both sides. So, you know, to have that break to hold off and especially coming into Kentucky, having that number one, ranking on your back and have to defend that makes it even harder because now the pressure builds and you're doing something that you've never done before. And then you get this Tennessee Martin before Alabama, which might even be the biggest game of Mississippi State's career. And you were telling me a stat before this game started, or this podcast started. Won't you share that with everybody?
Yeah, it's I thought it was actually a pretty interesting thing, but Mississippi State is the last team to actually win at Baton Rouge and Tuscaloosa in the same year, and that was in 1957. So it's been 57 years since a team has walked into Baton Rouge and Tuscaloosa and won in the same year. So, you know, there's lots of firsts that can be done to add on to a lot of the firsts that have already happened this year for Mississippi State football.
Yeah, so 50. As I was saying before the podcast started, when we were looking at, you know, the good news is you've done it before. The bad news is it's been 57 years. So, you know, it's not been done since, so at least the odds are in your favor that you can do it. But that's a really, really going to be a really pivotal and tough game for you guys. But it's not the end of the world, and we'll cover that one here in a little bit, so we don't spend too much time on it. We'll finish up this week. We'll go to that Vanderbilt game that we hinted at. You know, really, it was what I said. It was turnover after turnover after turnover. That really cost Vanderbilt the game, because there for a long time they were in the game, and even when they were making mistakes, they weren't, you know, Florida wasn't able to capitalize on them at first, and then all of a sudden it just, you can't keep making those kind of mistakes in the SEC and expect to win. So
I think that's one of the things that you can actually take a look at. You know, I think with Vanderbilt, what you're seeing is, I think you're finally seeing Derek Mason understand, you know, some of the things that are going on with regards to being a head coach. And so, you know, I think he's just finally getting his feet wet, and I think he's understanding how things are going. So, you got an angry dog, dude.
Yeah, the winner has shown up in Kentucky, Tennessee, and so I've brought the dog in from outside, and he's going to have to go back outside. So I'm going to let you talk for a second.
No problem. Yeah, absolutely. So the Vanderbilt, I think it's one of those things that I think the most impressive thing with Florida over the weekend was the defensive tackle or defensive lineman that actually learned that he was not going to start and ended up, you know, actually taking a bus home. I don't know if you heard that, Shane, but that was probably the most intriguing thing of the Florida Vanderbilt game by the time it was over with. But
what was that part?
The defensive lineman that found out he wasn't going to start, and they sent him on a bus, or he either took a bus back to Gainesville. It was kind of a funny, kind of an interesting deal. So he either, I heard two reports that they sent him on a bus, and then there was a report that he just got mad and left and went and got on a bus, like a Greyhound from Nashville, to go back to Gainesville. So, pretty tough evening there for that guy.
Well, I do feel bad for the Commodores. You know, that was a game that they had an opportunity to have a good showing and put themselves in a position to finish the season strong. I don't think there's, you know, any way in the world they would have rattled off four in a row to be bowl eligible. But
and you're right. And you know, the other thing I took away from that game is, you know, Will Muschamp hasn't lost that team.
No, not at all.
For them to go and play, you know, the week before against Georgia the way they played, then to come back and really fight through probably a letdown opportunity in Nashville, you know, it just kind of goes to show that, you know, if you're an AD there and you're looking at all the stuff, you know, one of the first things you're looking at in coaching change is, you know, hey, has this guy lost the team? And, you know, for all the stuff that everybody gives Will Muschamp, those guys are playing for him. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this thing actually plays out here over the next 2 to 3 weeks. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
No, I mean, what it really shows is to me, there's still an opportunity that he can keep his job. Mm-hmm. I mean, and if you look at the way the SEC East is and the way it's going to play out, we don't know how it will play out completely, but there's a very good opportunity for that. Well, I wouldn't say a very good. There's still a chance that Florida can win the East.
Yeah, and there's also a very good chance that Florida can walk into Tallahassee with the up and down ebb and flow of what Florida State's done this year. If it doesn't happen to them in Miami this weekend, that's definitely something to keep an eye on, because I think that is an opportunity where those guys at Florida can, you know, really kind of make a statement. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah, that's definitely a real opportunity that I haven't heard the national media talk about. I mean, they're giving Miami the only chance to beat Florida State right now. But the way I've seen Florida play at times, I think they could go toe-to-toe with the Florida State team this year. And that's another team that's had the breaks go their way. So, you know, how long can that continue to happen on that side of the ball? We'll see. Let's go over to a game that I wish would not have happened the way it did, and that was the Georgia game at Kentucky. Kentucky's defense has all of a sudden decided not to be able to play.
Oh, man, and to do that on senior day. I mean, to play that way with those senior defensive ends, that's a disappointing effort. You knew Georgia was going to get back up on the saddle and be ready to play. That's just the way Mark Richt is. But man, I didn't see that coming. I think if I remember correctly, no punts in the game, if I remember correctly. So Georgia never punted. And I believe they only had 8 third downs, which basically meant on first and second down, they were getting first downs. And so, you know, being married to a woman from Kentucky who hates Kentucky.
It was a good day for her.
Hates Kentucky. It's actually pretty comical, because he always, whenever Kentucky loses, he always goes in and turns on the Kentucky radio. And so we got to listen to that for about 45 minutes while we were watching the Auburn-Texas A&M game. And it was funny. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, the people calling in going, if we could have just gotten on to third down, and the guys are going, it didn't matter if it was third and 25, they were going to get it. And so it was interesting. I mean, it was just a pitiful effort. You know, and Shane and I've been talking about this all year. Kentucky was one of those teams you just didn't want to play them at home, because they were, if that's just really where they played their best ball, they really struggled on the road. But I'll tell you what, that was a poor performance. You know, Toles really never really seemed to kind of get his feet wet at all.
Had the opportunity to. I mean,
yeah, it was just a weird game. It's just like Georgia, you know, the special teams, golly, just rough day, man. rough day.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I've said for the last 4 weeks, Kentucky can't stop the run. And, you know, Georgia had Chubb, who had 174 yards. They got Sonny Michel back, who was able to get 16 touches on the ball. I mean, he had the bulk of the touches. He had more than Chubb did. So what better opportunity than to let him come back and get some more touches? And now Georgia's going to get Gurley back next week. I mean, that couldn't have been any better of an opportunity for Georgia as far as that run game. But, you know, Kentucky has to be able to stop the run. The good news is they have Tennessee this week. And, you know, for everything Tennessee has, they have a okay run game. They're not, you know, knock your socks.
The only thing that scared me as a Kentucky fan, and we'll get into this.
Oh, I know. They found a quarterback.
Yeah, with Dobbs, it makes that running game a little bit easier to establish. It gives Hurd a better option now that there's a running threat there. But yeah, I tell you what, that's disappointing. And you know, I've been there with regards to, you know, Mississippi State trying to figure out a way to get to a bowl game. You know, starting out 5-1, now 5-5, right?
Yeah.
No, 5-4. No, 5-5. So on a 4-game losing streak, I guess. And so you got Tennessee, and then you got Louisville, correct? Both on the road.
Yes, yes.
You know, so that's a tough 5-game stretch that you've been through. And so, you know, your two toughest games were at home, and you know, your three toss-up games are on the road, and that's just always difficult. So you got to figure out a way to try to get that done this week.
Yeah, no, it's
you really, you know, Mark really, you know, Stoops really needs to get that sixth win so he can get to a bowl. You don't want to go into Louisville trying to get that.
Yeah, no, if you can go in I don't want to give this game to Kentucky, especially now, you know, like you talked about with Dobbs, they found a quarterback. He becomes a dual threat in a lot of ways. Much harder to plan against the Tennessee Volunteers. It's not the Tennessee Volunteers team I wanted to face as a Kentucky fan coming into this game. But you're right. If you have to win one of the two games, you would rather just go on and be done with it with Tennessee. And if you lose to Louisville, it's okay. Instead of having to come to that last game of the season, it's just a lot of extra pressure against a program that really didn't have that pressure at the beginning of the season. But it's been self-created. I mean, they've been talking for, you know, basically 6 weeks, 7 weeks that there was a chance to become bowl eligible, and every week they're letting one slip by them. So the last game on my slate was Alabama at LSU.
That wasn't a good one at all, was it?
No, it was horrible. No, ridiculously bad. I didn't even want to watch it, but I did. You know, I stayed up.
I was thinking about this, you know, in the 90s, you know how Florida and Tennessee really kind of dominated. It was like the game of the decade, you know, always. But there was never really any good games. And, you know, with Alabama and LSU, I mean, we've had just, you know, really remarkable games. And so that's definitely been something that, you know, I think has really added to this rivalry that Alabama and LSU have had, and so it's really something that, you know, the other night was, it's really particularly wasn't a well played game, but it was one of those just, you know, grinded out bruiser games that had a really nice ending to it, you know, from that standpoint. But I was really looking forward to it going to about 6 overtimes, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, it was starting to remind you a little bit of that 9-6. Was that 2011 game?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was hard fought, tough to get yards. Both defenses were coming to play. Both offenses.
But it also showed you how, you know, to me, one of the things I took away from it was really some of the lack of playmakers that are on the field that used to be there 3 years ago. You know, I kind of was looking at this. How many Alabama teams from 2010 through last year's team would have walked into Baton Rouge with a quarterback at LSU that goes 8 for 26 and what, 92 yards, and they're going to need a 50-second drive to tie the ball game. That typically doesn't happen when you have that poor a quarterback play on the other side. And just kind of shows you kind of a little bit how off Alabama was. You know, their game plan, they threw it 28 times in the first half. You know, it's kind of this Lane Kiffin. We don't know what you're going to get from game to game. And LSU, I think, surprised them by just saying, we're going to man up and play bump and run coverage on these guys. And Alabama had to adjust and give Blake Sims credit. I mean, he was under 50% passing the whole game. He really was not having a good game. But when it counted in the last minute, he came up big. And
I've got some theories on that, too. Let me see if I'm right. Well, first off, I'll comment. You know, I don't think it was necessarily all Lane, because if you listen to Nick Saban in one of the interviews, I think it was on the field, you know, he was just basically saying pointing to the fact that they had the wrong game plan. You know, mm-hmm. They were trying something. It wasn't working. We just had the wrong game plan. So it wasn't necessarily all on Kiffin. I think that was both of their coming to an agreement on the way they needed to call that game offensively, and it just wasn't the right move. Also, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Blake Sims in that performance and the last minute and a half of that ball game. But if you look, they were probably playing what, cover two, a prevent defense. Yeah. You know, so Blake Sims was taking advantage of what they were giving him, those 8 and 10 yard spots, and they were just being smart about it and getting out of bounds. So they were able to chip away at it and get themselves into a position. But you're right. He had to make the plays. They had to make the catches. But, you know, it had to do with some of the way LSU's defense was being set up to prevent. They didn't want to get beat deep.
Yeah. And the crazy thing, I think his longest pass of the evening was, you know, the one that actually went down to like the 7 yard line for them to actually have the chip shot there to tie the ball game at the end of regulation. You know, he had not really thrown anything over 12 yards the whole night and completed it. So
right.
It was, you know, basically LSU saying, I dare you to throw it. And they're definitely a tough place to play. I mean, for LSU, you know, that was an opportunity that they had. And, you know, and for Kiffin to come out and call that play in overtime.
The trick play?
Yeah, I mean, where you line up the tackle out wide and then throw it back to a tackle on the line. I mean, it's a pretty gutsy call, and, you know, it really kind of gave, you know, Alabama all the momentum going into it. So, I tell you what, it was a tough fought game. It was very entertaining. You know, and I was almost really, really excited after that game. But, you know, when you kick it out of bounds, let them start at the 35, that really helps you out. That gives you 15 seconds all day long.
You say that, and I agree that it was a nice bonus. But, you know, they get it to 25 now if it goes out of bounds or if it goes through the end zone. What's 10 yards? I mean, from the kick he would have made, if you took it 10 yards back, it was still – under most circumstances.
Yeah, it was a 39-yarder, which the kid was a disaster. That's why they threw the ball there at the end to get inside. And LSU, I don't think LSU thought that they would really try to, you know, throw a 15, 18-yard out to the sidelines that, you know, that late in the clock. I thought that they figured they were just going to say, hey, we've kind of burned the fire. I think if you're going to squib it, which is what they were trying to do,
yeah.
Your whole idea is that you're trying to get them inside the 25-yard line, which, you know, means that you've got one extra play or one or two extra plays where there's an opportunity to tackle them in bounds. There's all things that can happen. You just got to make them go that extra 10 yards. And, you know, I guarantee you the play calling goes a little bit different from the 25 than it does, hey, if you can go with the 35 and now I got a quick strike. Just a really poor execution by the kicker to kick that out of bounds and give them any type of life that they needed from that standpoint.
Well, let's spend a second now talking about, we mentioned it in the intro, that the college football playoff just announced week 3. Are you surprised that Alabama didn't move up a spot?
I'm not really surprised for right now. I figured that, you know, I thought with TCU, I was wondering if they were going to give TCU, you know, because TCU, I mean, if you look at their body of work through what's actually happened, even though Baylor's actually beaten them, I still think that if we go three more games and Baylor wins out and they still got the same schedule, I think Baylor ends up jumping them. But I think Alabama, I think it's one of those things where I think those top six, they all got the ability to win out and control their destiny. So a lot of people are getting all worked up over it. The biggest thing to me was not necessarily TCU over Alabama, but it was the jump of Oregon over Florida State. I think we can all agree that Florida State is not the dominant team they were a year ago. But, you know, there's still the ability to go into a Power Five and actually win every game.
Well, I said this when the just before the Louisville game. You know, the committee is waiting for Florida State to lose, and when they do, they're going to plummet.
Yeah, and I don't see a way that they actually stay undefeated. I think they've been playing with fire all year. I think there's going to be a night where it doesn't all go right for them, and it's so difficult. I mean, in 12 games, God, it's so difficult, man. You know, to get up for every single game, and you know, they definitely got the target on their back. But you know, I thought in this one, you know, with two undefeated teams, you know, I still thought, hey, you know, that a loss means a lot, and you still got to do it on the field. You know, people talk about, you know, I mean, when you've got a head-to-head, to me, you know, at some point in time, yeah, it could be a better team that you perceive, but they still got to get it done on the field. You know, it's the whole argument, you know, if Alabama has two losses, but they might be favored against everybody else in the field, well, that's all good and great, but Alabama's got to win the ball games. And so that was one that actually shocked me. But, I mean, it's nothing that we can get too worked up over. You know, these next 3 weeks is when it's all going to be decided anyway.
Yeah, I think Mike Golic made a great point. He picked Alabama not to move. And I would have thought that they were fourth. And it really doesn't matter, because after this week, you know, with State and Alabama playing each other, that's going to be decided. You know, whether Alabama is 9-1 or 8-2, you know, that makes a big difference. And number five or being number four would not matter at that point, because I could see them possibly going to number two or three if they can get the victory.
Absolutely.
You know, with that being said, and we can curtail this to this week's matchup of Alabama Mississippi State. I think on the other hand of that is if Mississippi State does lose, and that's a difficult proposition for you guys to come into Tuscaloosa and get that win. You know, we already said it's been 57 years since somebody's been able to do that to both LSU and Alabama, and you guys did it. But it's going to be very difficult this year for you guys to do that. I think if I had to look at your last three games, this one is your best chance at a loss, especially after, you know, the injuries that Ole Miss has faced over the last 3 weeks and what you're not going to get back on Mississippi. So that Egg Bowl, while it's still going to be the Egg Bowl, it's still going to be a very tough matchup. You know, you have more of an edge. Mississippi State has more of an edge now than they did 3 weeks ago in that game. So if you lose this game, I don't see you going any further than fifth with an opportunity to still be in the top four.
Yeah, and I think it all depends on how the game is actually played. If I believe if they play them tight and it's a fourth quarter ball game and Bama wins.
Yeah, if it's an Alabama A&M game, I you throw that out the window.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it's LSU Alabama, you know, all of a sudden, I don't see you guys going any lower than 5, maybe 6. But that still doesn't mean you're out of it. Because
yeah, actually, if we lose by a touchdown or less, I don't think we fall initially the next week out of the top 4. Because if you're looking at a 9-1 Mississippi State that basically has its only loss, which a touchdown close game at Alabama. Yeah, I mean, everybody's been setting it up. I mean, all the national pundits, you know, that's why I'm really excited about this game, to be honest with you, because I think it is Mississippi State back in an old role that they're very comfortable and familiar with, which is they are the underdog. They're the number one team in the country, but for a month, all they've been talking about is that they're going to go to Bama and lose. And so they're the only conversation the whole last 3 weeks is everybody in the West is going to have 2 losses because they expect Mississippi State to lose to Bama and Ole Miss. And I think those kids hear that. I think also what you see is, I think you see a Kentucky game, an Arkansas game, and a UT Martin game that was very tight. And I think the guys that played with a ton of pressure because they wanted to get to this game with an undefeated record. And so I think you will see a different Mississippi State team than you've seen for the last month, you know, where I think it's going to be back to the loosey-goosey, you know, very focused, very high energy, get ready to go. And so that's what I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, and what I take a look at is, as a Mississippi State fan, any proposition of going into Tuscaloosa, we lost 19 straight there. So, you know, it's not something that we got a good history of going in there and winning. I take that back. We beat them with Michael Hennig. I forget about the Mike Shule years where we...
Do we count those?
Yeah. Well, Alabama doesn't, but Mississippi State sure does. That's a John Parker. I wish John Parker played for 10 years for Alabama. But, you know, it's one of those things, dude, where... You know, if you're going to pick a Bama team that you got to go into Tuscaloosa and beat, this is the Bama team I'd choose out of the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And if there's a Mississippi State team that can go and do it, this is by far the best Mississippi State team to go do it. So, you know, I think it's going to be a fun game. I think it's going to be the toughest front seven that they faced offensively. Our defense, I think – that they've actually faced up front big and strong. And I think I'm really anxious to look at our offense against their defense. I think that's the matchup the whole game. And, you know, what Dak Prescott can actually do and Josh Robinson. Because if you don't think that Mississippi State hadn't been waiting for this opportunity and Dak Prescott's not going to hand that ball, you got to run that ball 18 times and Josh Robinson get it 20 times, they're going to find every way, shape, or form to say, you're just going to have to beat us. And they're going to put it in his hands. So he's going to touch it 40 times during the game, 20-plus passes and 18 touches, I guarantee you. So I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be a good game. We'll see how it goes.
But
the one thing I'll say is Blake Sims, although sometimes he gets erratic in the passing game, his feet – are the key to the whole thing. He's something that Alabama, he's not the typical game manager that they've had. He gives them something a little bit different with the running element, but they have one player that can change the entire complexion of the game. That's Amari Cooper. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, Mississippi State is always this year going to give you the 7-yard out so that you can, yeah, rack up passing yards on us because we just don't let you run. And as much as we've been up in games, we faced a ton of passing. So it looks like we're just god-awful passing defense. But I think we got corners that can be physical with them. The kicker is going to be, can we tackle them when they catch the football? Just like Texas A&M. Texas A&M's whole setup is to catch the football and actually make plays after the catch. Amari Cooper is dynamic running routes, but he is even more dynamic once he touches the ball. When he catches it, you got to get him down, and that's going to be the key to the thing.
And And just to hit on that, if you do lose and you go to 5 or 6, I mean, Arizona State sitting there at 6, if they win out, they're going to have to play Oregon in the Pac-12 championship, will they not?
Oh, yeah.
So one of those two is out.
Yeah.
You know, we both think that there's a loss in Florida State's future. Now, they could be the Auburn and thorn in my side, and I could be completely wrong, and they blow this all up. But, you know, they're out. So if you went to 6 this week, that's already got you to 4 right there.
I think if Mississippi State lost to Bama and lost tight, I could argue, and if they went on and won the Egg Bowl and ended up 11-1 and don't get to play in the SEC championship, so they sit there at 11-1 with the only thing that they have. The thing as a Mississippi State fan that you have to hope for is that Arizona State and Oregon do win out to face each other, okay? And then you got to hope that Florida State loses a game, because if you do that, that's the only way. What you'll see is you will actually see the non-traditional name of Mississippi State get destroyed. If there's other teams in there, and you'll get non-conference schedule, all that kind of jazz that's going to come into play. You know, when you sign a Southern Miss, when they, you know, been freaking blowing people out and been winning for 20 years, and all of a sudden the last 2 years, they're terrible. You know, a UAB and a South Alabama and a UT Martin, people are just, the non-conference is going to come back and bite them. So, that's why I say
I'm tired of the non-conference just bull crap.
Well, I'm tired of it too.
Because let's face it, what other conference out there plays another in-conference schedule like the SEC?
Well, that's the whole thing. Is like
if they played this big of a conference game, I don't care what kind of 4 games they play outside, because it doesn't matter at that point, because you've proven yourself against some of the best in the country. So for them to go out and say, well, they didn't play a tough non-conference game, they played 8 damn good ones in the middle of it. So,
yeah.
You know, put that in your pipe and smoke it. And that's not being talked about. But I think the committee looks at that. I mean, because – you look at what's in this top 25, and it's still littered with SEC programs. So they know that week after week, when they have to put those straps on those helmets and go out there and hit somebody, it's not like they're just playing some school for the death or something like that, or some directional school. Most of the time, those games mean something. And A&M's perfect example of that.
Yeah, the frustrating part that I actually have with non-conference games are when you're Mississippi State, you know, there you're going to get required to do this coming up where we got to play the Power Fives, but we're basically going to have to get help from the SEC office to help stimulate that, because nobody wants to come to Starkville, because it's a lose-lose. If you are Oregon or you are, you know, Arizona State, why do you want to come to Starkville? It's more to lose than it is to gain. It's just like us trying to get some, you know, La Tech. You know, their La Tech basically goes, well, Mississippi State can pay me $500,000 and Georgia can pay me $1 million. So I'll take Mississippi State, do two for one type deal. So, you know, it's non-conferences, it's not as easy is everybody says, well, you play nobody. Well, you know, it's not as if you're out there saying, hey, I just want to play 4 cupcakes. You kind of do, from the standpoint of you want 4 wins, but it's not necessarily. I mean, we went and played Oklahoma State last year in a Texas, you know, Houston shootout or whatever it was called to start the year. But those are the only ways. I mean, that was a created ESPN thing. And so it's just, for me, it's just a little bit frustrating. I think for Mississippi State, the only way that you get into this playoff scenario is you beat Alabama and you beat Ole Miss and you get in that SEC championship game and you win your way into it. And then there's no questions asked.
Yeah, but I'm looking at, I mean, none of us would sit here and say that you all would have went 13-0 going into the college football championship.
Yeah.
You know, there's a loss in there somewhere. It's shaping up after some of the injuries for Ole Miss that might not be it. So this is your best opportunity to lose if you have to look at it that way. And if that is the case, in my opinion, even though Alabama might go to the SEC championship game, you all could still be there and still make the Final Four.
Yeah, I think so too. And it all depends on what happens, but you need those two Pac-10, Pac-12 teams to play out, and you need Florida State to lose, and then you kind of got to, you know, does an Ohio State or somebody come in there just because they're a bigger name and they're chosen over a Mississippi State? I mean, there's going to be a lot of politicking that goes along with that.
Yeah, so. But even a bad loss to Alabama is going to rate higher than Ohio State's loss to Virginia Tech.
Yeah, you would think.
Who might not even make it to a bowl game. And their only signature win is Michigan State last week. Mississippi State has a number of signature wins on their resume this year. Yeah. I couldn't imagine any sane person in their right mind could put Ohio State over a one-loss Mississippi State to Alabama. That's just ridiculous. Now, somebody that's looking for redemption and might have righted the ship is Georgia, who's trying to inch back up in the polls ever so slightly, hosting Auburn after last year's performance. What do you think Georgia's chances are with this?
Oh, I think they're really good because, number one, you're playing at home. You had Auburn beat last year. Defensively, Georgia is probably play. You know, that's kind of the kicker. Auburn, I'm just interested to see how Auburn comes back. It's really the first adversity under Gus Malzahn. The way they lost the game, now they got two losses. You're going to Georgia. Personally, I would like to see Auburn win because I think another loss puts Missouri in the driver's seat to, be the East winner. And if Mississippi State got there, I'd rather see Missouri than I would Georgia, just personally. But Auburn can't stop anybody. Georgia can't stop the run. Now Georgia, you got Gurley coming back. You're at home. You got a little bit of life. You played, really well. I think Hudson Mason played a really, really good game the other day. So, they got all the momentum, and Auburn has got to get back up off the map. So we'll see how it works out.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said, except, I want to see Georgia win this one because I picked Georgia to win the East at the very beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And you're right, a loss would basically hand the East to Missouri at that point because that gets, with that being said, we can talk about that Missouri game. Last week when if we had to preview this game, we would say there's no way that they could lose that game. But going to Kyle Field to have Kyle Allen and Texas A&M, who out of nowhere is all of a sudden – found a way to play impressive. I'm going to go with Texas A&M's going to win that game now. I wouldn't have said that a week ago.
Yeah, and I think the
I don't want to be fooled. You know, that's the thing is any given week a team can come out and play lights out. Can they do it repeatedly? And that's where A&M's had that problem. And so will we see a repeat performance of last week or what we saw, 2 and 3 weeks ago?
I think the thing that Shane that you're talking about there is the consistency. Is Texas A&M going to regress this week after such a monumental upset last week? That's a good question. And Missouri has quietly, outside of this terrible Indiana loss, has really quietly, won ball games and not been impressive at all.
That's the way they were last year. They just won.
Last year, though, man, they were
They had some pretty good wins. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
they defensively, they were very stout. They also had a quarterback, and you had the running back, and you had the wide receivers. I mean, you had some playmakers that were pretty tough. But
they even though they won big, they still flew under the radar. Nobody gave them any attention.
Absolutely. Yeah, they were kind of the darling that came out of it. But I think the Myles Garrett. How many times did Auburn drag that guy down to the ground and then not call holding? I mean, that was the craziest thing I ever seen. I've never seen more holding calls in a game that were not called. It was phenomenal. But that kid is a true freshman, is a monster. And him going after Matty Mock is not a recipe for is a recipe for disaster. So it's a hard one to pick, because I could see Texas A&M taking a step back and Missouri going in there and kind of taking the momentum. But I could also see a really young player in Kyle Allen taking the momentum from last and really kind of, taking another step and really leading that offense. So I wouldn't be really shocked on either side of this thing, to be honest with you, Shane.
I wouldn't either. If I had to go with if you said, all right, you're picking one, I've got to go with A&M.
I do too.
Sumlin, he knows how to get these guys ready for these games, and all of a sudden he can make this a big game, because while Texas A&M cannot, I mean, they're not mathematically eliminated, but by all intents and purposes, they're not going to win the West. A win this week puts them at 8-3 overall, 4-3 in the conference, and that gets them cemented right there in the top half of the SEC West, giving them the opportunity to be one of the elite teams, play for an elite bowl game, give them those type of feathers in the hats. This is also an opportunity for them to knock off the East champion. This is your SEC championship game, because Missouri right now would be going to Atlanta. So this is your Atlanta. This is your opportunity to prove that the West is better than the East. You're in College Station. I mean, there's a lot that Sumlin can do from a coaching standpoint to keep that momentum going, because you're right. After a monumental win against Auburn the way they did, it would be tough to you've got that letdown. So you've got to find ways to get these kids refocused. And those are ways that I think Sumlin could take advantage of, and things that are sitting there that are easy to get these guys focused to realize there is something to play for. And for that reason alone, I'm going to go with A&M.
I'm with you. If I had to bet right now, that's where I'd go.
All right. Is Arkansas finally going to get an SEC win? They get LSU.
Ooh. Is that game in Arkansas?
It's at Arkansas.
Ooh, that's a good question. I think they can do that, man. Especially with LSU. I saw a stat today that, Alabama in the last five, the last five games against LSU, the next game they haven't scored in the first quarter. So, it's kind of taken a toll on them. LSU is the same way. I mean, to lose that game the way that they lost that game against Alabama, as physical as it was, the kicker for LSU is if Beckwith is not available, which is their middle linebacker that pulled his hamstring. If you remember that, right there towards the end of the half, they played the whole second half without him. Yeah. That was a huge, huge blow to them. I think Arkansas, the next 2 weeks, if they got LSU this week, they got Ole Miss coming in next week, who you're talking about a completely different offense without Treadwell, a team that's susceptible all of a sudden to the run on their defense and pounding it. You're playing in Arkansas. This is a good opportunity for Arkansas. And Arkansas was off last week, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Okay. Oof. Man.
When we talked about Mississippi State and your schedule, the other thing that we talked about last week was the fact that not only just because you had UT Martin, so it was a easier game for you, but Alabama also had LSU, and that was going to be a bloodbath. There was going to be lots of hitting, lots of hard hitting, lots of tough football being played. Well, the same can be said against LSU and this Arkansas program. You know, they had a bye week to prepare for an LSU team that got beat up pretty bad as well. So
yeah, the one thing I learned, you know, watching Arkansas, you know, against Mississippi State, was, you know, Bielema has not lost the team. They're playing very hard for him. Brandon Allen is a player. You know, Arkansas is one of those teams that's really kind of got to – they've kind of got to make their own breaks and get through it. And they kind of – and it's never going to be really pretty. It's going to be kind of ugly getting through it. So they need one of these ugly wins, and LSU is – you know, and that's always a weird series. You know, the Arkansas-LSU games have always typically ended the year, but they're always a little bit quirky. And so I definitely would be interested to see how this thing goes out. I mean, I think Arkansas's got as good as a chance as anything.
And do they finish? I'm trying to pull it up. Don't they finish with A&M? Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's the new I believe that is the – is that the Thanksgiving game this year? I believe LSU, Texas A&M's on Thanksgiving night.
I'm pulling it up right now. Ole Miss, that's week 13. Sorry, I've got a computer that doesn't want to be fast. But we have Arkansas at Missouri on the 28th, on Friday, not A&M.
Really?
Really? It's LSU and A&M.
That's what I was thinking, was LSU and A&M, that's the Thursday night. That's the Thanksgiving night.
So, I mean, there's games out there. I mean, you look at Arkansas' schedule, and you say Bielema's not lost the team. There's good reason. They're sitting there at 4-5. They're 2 wins away from being bowl eligible. Yeah. And for a program like Arkansas, I mean, that's like Kentucky and Tennessee. That's liquid gold right there. I mean, take that to the bank. Those extra practices are just invaluable for those three programs, and they're all sitting there. And that's what I was trying to say at the beginning of this thing, is you're looking at some of these programs that are out there on the cusp of bowl eligibility, and that's one of them right there. And so they've got a lot to play for this Saturday.
Yeah, and I think I'm interested to see, because I think this is a good spot for Arkansas, and they've kind of found a way to lose some games, and you know, maybe this is their opportunity to come through, especially at home.
All right, Kentucky at Tennessee.
That's a hard one to pick.
Does the Cats have a chance?
I know we have
a chance. Do you think we're going to win?
That's a good question, because Tennessee has found lightning in a bottle with Dobbs, and it's really just been, a game and a half, 2 games. You know, and we saw this kid come in last year and regress towards the end of it. You know, Tennessee had off last week, an opportunity to kind of sit back and watch Kentucky coming off really a dismal performance. So you think there's going to be a little bit of pride?
Hey, at least we didn't show them any. At least we didn't show them anything. We didn't give them our hand.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see, because this is, I think this is a game that the Tennessee fans, Butch Jones, I think all of them will be looking at this really kind of a must win for them. I think they're going to obviously have everything that they can actually swing at it. And this is, for me, it's a very tough game to pick. If I had to pick it, I would go with Tennessee with the home field advantage, just because I don't have faith that Kentucky can stop anybody. Yeah. But it would not surprise me at all if Tennessee found a way to lose this game.
I want to sit here and say I hate your assessment, but I completely agree. I mean, but Tennessee, they've got to win 2 of their next 3 to be bowl eligible. Kentucky,
correct.
Missouri, they host Missouri, and then do they come here to Nashville for Vanderbilt? Is that right? Yes. Yeah, it's here. Because when Kentucky is at Tennessee, Tennessee is at Vanderbilt. That's the way it used to be, and so they've kept that at least. The one constant in this new on these new schedules, because that used to be the Tennessee Kentucky used to be our last game, and it's not anymore. Yeah. So you know, Vanderbilt should be a winnable game, but if they can cure the turnover bug, that's a different Vanderbilt program the last 2 weeks. None of those are an easy, you know, I can't sit there and say Tennessee can win, is going to win all three of those. I can't sit here and say that. I could say they could lose all three of those. I could say they could win all three of those.
I think you're right.
That's what's so hard about this. I'm glad I don't spend money or bet money on this, because I'd be broke. That's why Vegas wins. That's your tip of the day, guys. Vegas wins. And they do it. I mean, they got their racket figured out. Wonder how. I know how, but that's another podcast. So we'll wrap things up with South Carolina at Florida. Spurrier going home.
I chose South Carolina on this in one of my pools that I was in, just because it's Spurrier going to Florida. And just when you think South Carolina is dead and gone, they'll come up and play a game like they did against Auburn, you know. But, you know, now the last 2 weeks that Florida's played, I'll be interested to see. I mean, God, man, who knows? I'm going to go with South Carolina.
I like that pick. I don't know if that's the right pick or not, but
yeah, I think Florida's going to win.
I mean, if they could do that, I mean, you look at South Carolina and what they have. They end with Clemson. So what do they have sandwiched in between? Do they have a second?
I think that's it.
Are they off? South Alabama at South Carolina. They've got a sandwiched game there.
Okay.
So they have to win one of those two games, Clemson or Florida, to make it to a bowl. I mean, I couldn't believe we're sitting here the last quarter of the season basically saying that South Carolina's got to win one of these two games to be bowl eligible. I never at the beginning of the season thought we would have had that conversation. But that's what it's boiling down to, is they got to beat Florida or Clemson.
Yeah, that's pretty tough. I'm actually going to take South Carolina in this. I don't know why. It's just whenever you think Spurrier's dead, he comes alive, and there's never a better time than Florida.
And then, so Florida's got Eastern Kentucky that week. So they've got, and that's their game before Florida State. I'm missing a game for them. They're 5-3. They're 8. I don't know. But they've got to win one game. So they've got it with South Alabama. Or who did I just say?
Eastern Kentucky.
So they should have their bowl game and become bowl eligible. So I want to see more teams become bowl eligible. So I'm going to go South Carolina's going to win this game. That gets both of them an opportunity to be bowl eligible. It's just fun football, man. That's all of them for the week. Now you got lots of teams that have lots to fight for. Even if you're not playing for a college football top four spot this week, you know, there's lots of things that each one of these teams and each one of these matchups provide. So it's an exciting 7 games that start us off at 11 Central, and we get a 7 o'clock game. I like how they. I wish they'd get spaced out just a little bit further, but.
Well, I mean, it's like CBS. They can't, you know. CBS has had a couple of blunders this year, and I don't know if you saw the one for Thanksgiving week, but you know, they had to take the Kentucky Mississippi State game because Kentucky, because the CBS contract requires that every school be on CBS within a 6-year window. And Kentucky's last SEC appearance was in 2008. So they knew going into this year that they're going to have to play. Kentucky was going to have to be a CBS game at some point.
At some point.
And so whenever State became number one, they chose that game, which allowed the LSU Ole Miss game to roll to ESPN when you would probably choose that game to be your CBS game. So that rolls to ESPN. The next week, they have the cocktail party. And so it rolled to ESPN.
Which turned out to be a much better game than we anticipated.
It did, but you would probably would have wanted that Auburn-Ole Miss game as the actual CBS game. And then now that Thanksgiving, they had to give up the Iron Bowl and choose the Egg Bowl. So the Egg Bowl is going to be on CBS for the first time ever the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Because this Saturday will be Alabama's fifth time being on CBS this year, which is a max that one school can be on CBS during a calendar year. So so CBS is just – so that rolls the Iron Bowl to ESPN for Thanksgiving weekend. So they've just they've had a myriad of issues. You know, and in 2:30 you're going to – I mean, nobody's playing then, so you're always going to have the high numbers, and it doesn't really matter, but you would still want to have some ratings and not just give it to ESPN, but it's pretty interesting.
I know, but, I mean, you get a 7:15, a 7:30, and an 8. It just – was it 2 weeks ago, you had two games in and at the exact same time, and you're watching two TVs if you're lucky enough to do that. So, but you look at the schedule and the only other option is to put something, you know, a little bit sooner than the CBS game, a mid-afternoon game to help spread it out a little bit is really your only other option. Because if you look at it, I mean, you go 3:34, 7:15, 7:38.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is when you got this many games being played in a season. Or in a week, so that's fun. Just want them all to be starting one right after another. Can we do that? No, right. but I do see more Thursday games coming down the SEC's future. Well, I know you. That's a topic we've discussed before.
Yeah, I think you're crazy.
Yeah, I've been called worse. So we'll see how it happens.
I understand.
They like money, though. And it's, I mean, they're proving that the ratings on Thursdays are getting good numbers. Even non-SEC games that have been played on Thursdays are getting good quality
it's
numbers.
It's funny, man, because if you look at it.
And Slav's not there anymore. I mean, he's leaving, so. You know, there's your proponent.
For me, I never watch a college game on Thursday. I always fall back to the Thursday pro football game. And I like to see the numbers because NFL always dominates college anyway. You know, just the mass ratings of it. Especially when you get into the coastlines and you know, the Midwest and all that type of stuff. So it's just interesting because I don't know. It's, I always find myself watching the pro game and I never pay attention to the college game. Because I know that there's not going to be an SEC game on.
I was about to say, until the SEC puts one on Thursday nights. Guys, that's taking us down a rat hole we're not ready to breach tonight. So we appreciate you listening and joining us. Blair, thanks for coming on and talking some football with me for the last hour or so. We can never get these under an hour. Too much to talk about. But that's okay. Guys, we go like us. Follow us on Twitter, SECSRT. Subscribe. Do whatever you need to so that you always get these in your inbox or how you listen to them. And we would appreciate that. And any feedback you want to provide, we'd love to hear from you as well. So, guys, with that, we will call this podcast done.